Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Following On County Cricketer, a weekly podcast from TalkSport and The Cricketer magazine. I'm TalkSport's cricket editor, John Norman. Every Thursday, I'm joined by two-time county championship winner, Steve Harmison, as well as George DeBell and Nick Friend from thecricketer.com. And while the weather intervened this week, still plenty to talk about with some stunning individual performances from the likes of the Sams, North East and Cook, a win for Essex and continuing debate rumbling around the use of the Kookaburra ball. We will also discuss England's Jimmy Anderson problem and go around the grounds. And if you like what you hear, please take the time to leave a five-star review on the podcast page and follow at @cricket_TS on X. And for even more content, head over to the TalkSport Cricket YouTube channel and hit subscribe. But for now, thanks for listening to Following On County Cricketer. Well, look, we've got one result to talk about from the first round of the county championship. One result. There's been a lot of rain. There's been a lot of articles about Sam North East. And we've had one result. But it doesn't matter because there's so much other stuff, so much stuff to talk about. We are going to talk about Essex. We're going to be talking about some of the standout performances from both Division 1 and Division 2. But I think we're going to start by talking about, and please don't turn off your radios, we're going to talk about the Kookaburra ball. George and Nick both wrote some words on the Cricketer. Check it out, cricketer.com, about the Kookaburra ball. We've got Harmy here as well, so it'd be interesting to get his thoughts because he's not going to be talking about Durham because that was one of two games abandoned without a ball being bowled. But let's start with the Kookaburra. I mean, there was so much rain, it's fanciful to suggest that we would have had more than one result, do you think, George, if the Duke's ball had been used? I'm not so sure. But
I think we would have got a result at Edgbaston. I think the game would have been completely different.
Do you think, but the point that was made is that essentially the Kookaburra makes taking wickets in these conditions more difficult. It is basically training our bowlers up. Right? Training our bowlers up to be able to take wickets in less helpful conditions. And so this is just part of that process, isn't it?
That's one legitimate argument. I mean, whether you're training bowlers to take wickets in these conditions where they're using a different ball to the one that they might then be playing at test level is also debatable. I think what it did, or what it does, is expose some issues we already knew were there, but the lack of pace in the English game is pretty obvious and pretty painful. And bowlers who might well have enjoyed early season conditions with the Dukes were kind of neutered. Whether that's good or bad, look, my own feelings are that I don't particularly like the Kookaburra. I think it's a less good ball. It creates less entertaining cricket. But do we need that wake-up call in English cricket? Are we almost playing a different sport to the rest of the world? We might be. So it's an experiment. And with experiments, it's probably best to wait until they're over and you have the data and you can evaluate before reaching conclusions. So it doesn't create brilliantly entertaining cricket. There's no way around it. And it is a change. But I can see some purpose in it. I'm not as anti as, say, you know, Alex Stewart or Mark Robertson has been. But my instinct would be to argue to use the Dukes pretty much everywhere. But we're not winning that argument.
Nick, you've spoken to people in the game. What's the feeling?
It's interesting. I mean, George, I think you mentioned conditions, John, your initial question. I think the conditions are a big part of this. I think it's interesting. Training people up is one way of looking at it. Upskilling players is another way of looking at it. Grant Bradburn, who was New Zealander, who was Glamorgan's new head coach, was quite good in it afterwards. He's broadly in favour, for the reasons that are fairly straightforward, I think, and that it highlights the value of pace, of reverse swing, of utilizing swing when it's there, of controlling the run rate, of all the things that produce good cricket, whatever ball you're using. He caveated that was by saying that in New Zealand, they're very used to the Kookaburra and they've worked out what makes a good balanced game of cricket. And that means you leave 12, 15 mils of fairly live grass on the pitch. And not just that, but underneath the live grass, you've got a fairly firm surface. Now, the issue that a lot of people have had with it in this round, and speaking to bowlers who have had pretty wet pre-seasons in some cases, you know, coming to this round pretty undercooked, anyway. I was at Lord's for 3 days and I watched Morgan do 211 overs in the field. And I watched Middlesex do 139 overs in the field. And bear in mind, you know, it's very easy to look at that and say, oh, well, this is the one, you know, we've got no pace in the game. Middlesex had Henry Brooks and Tom Helm. Glamorgan picked Dan Duthwaite because he's their quickest bowler. Glamorgan bowled 67 overs of spin. Middlesex bowled 30 overs of Josh De Keyre's his off spin. There were fielders in every single catching position you could possibly think of. Glamorgan had an entire reverse umbrella, so literally five catches in front of the scrum, the offside, four on the leg side. Middlesex had honestly went through every plan. Max Holden was caught at leg gully off the front foot. Like every plan was gone through. And I think it'd be very easy to look at that scorecard and say, well, this, you know, see this, there's no pace in this game. Helm and Brooks are two of the guys that England have looked at in the last couple of years because they are tall, they can be quick. The problem is though, you're playing this game in April with the ball that gets soft very quickly on a pitch that has been essentially undercover for 6 months because it's not stopped raining. So that crucial bit that Bradburn talked about, which is live grass on top of a firm surface, is just not possible at this time of year. I thought the Kookaburra was a really successful experiment last year because, well, frankly, for the things that it did, in terms of bringing spin into the game, particularly on drier surfaces at a drier time of year. And it by and large produced results. It also produced some massive scores for some batters. So you still get that variety of cricket, as to be fair, this round had, you know, Sam Northey's got 300, but Notts were also bowled out for 80. So it does, you know, it does work differently at different grounds. And I think if you look at the bowlers who went really well in this round, you've still got that variety. Sam Cook, I think we'll get to later in the show, is pretty reasonably accepted as probably the most skillful uncapped English bowler on the circuit. Dane Patterson took five for his African Test bowler. He's grown up with the Kookaburra. Cam Steele took five for bowling leg spin for Surrey on a drier surface. But and also to be fair, cleaning up the tail, which is what you want your leggy to do. So it does. There is still some purpose in there. I mean, the people I spoke to were generally sort of a lot of the players I spoke to don't love it. They do also recognise why it's being used. The ones I found most interesting were the players who grow up with the Kookaburra in Australia, and Dan Worrell was very good in pre-season. He just basically said that this isn't you're not getting what you expect to get from it. So I said to him, are you advantaged as an Australian who's got 200 odd Sheffield Shield wickets? And he just laughed and said, we are looking at different sports, even with the Kookaburra, because the pitches are different. They're not bouncy. They're not firm. Particularly this time of year, it was so lush at Lord's that there was no reverse swing. So the game that essentially lasts 15 overs, and that's probably quite. I don't know if I've got to an answer there, but that's by and large the consensus I got to, which there's some sort of understanding, but maybe that this particular time of year is not where it's best used.
George, before we get Harmy in on this, you've
Just
got
a
a
couple of
point.
observations. Henry Brooks' average speed was 75 miles an hour in this game. I think that's interesting that we're still talking about him as a fast bowler. Maybe
But
highlight.
you're not. But you're not both ways. I mean, they bowled 139 overs in their first outdoor game, their first multi-day game of the season for 6 months. Yeah, you've got to crank it up. And to be fair, his first spell was, I'd guess, much quicker. I mean, he beat Billy Root for pace, I think, with the one that he cleaned him up with. And no doubt he got slower as it went on, but I'd guess that everyone would have done.
Yeah, I'm just making the point that there isn't a lot of pace in the England game. And also, Bradburn talking about New Zealand wickets. I mean, personally, New Zealand wickets I find quite testing. I mean, John, you'll remember some of those tests we've been to
Oh,
in
yeah.
New Zealand. The other thing I'd say, and I know that people in New Zealand won't like it, as I say, as a New Zealander, fondly, no one goes to cricket in New Zealand. I mean, how many people go to first-class games in New Zealand? A dozen? How many people go to test matches in New Zealand of England, aren't there? New
Or
Zealand,
Australia.
New
Who
Zealand
doesn't?
wickets. Yeah, right. New Zealand wickets are not the way to go in the modern game.
No, I don't think he
We
was saying.
strongly feel that that's the wrong way to go, but.
No, but I don't think he was saying we should be trying to replicate New Zealand wickets. I think what he was saying is that the Kookaburra does require, you do need to, essentially, the Kookaburra does require a different surface to your Duke surface. I think there would probably be a result at Lord's, for example, with the Dukes because of
There might have been,
time
yeah.
of year and the ball stays harder. But I had players in that game telling me that by the end of 80 overs, it looked like a hockey ball because the seam gets pushed so far into the ball that there's nothing, there's almost nothing to grip onto. So the thing's knackered, which you don't get with the Dukes. And however soft the pitch is, you will always get a bit of nibble. And as you say, that's not necessarily what we want from the game. But I did think it was notable that if you look at the guys who took the wickets, the guys who took the wickets are still the guys who, towards the end of the season, will be towards the top of the wicket taking list, whether it is, just looking down that list now, Sam Cook, Jaden Seals, Jamie Porter, Dane Patterson, Matt
Cam
Mills,
Steele.
Ollie Robinson, Lewis Gregory, Chris Rushworth. They're the guys who took 4 wickets plus in the game. And a lot of those games were pretty wet. So there's obviously still something in it for bowling well,
Yeah, I look. I
which.
think the thing that they're perhaps not saying is that one of the other reasons that they're doing this is because they don't want Dukes to have a monopoly on the market. And let's face it, I'm a Dukes fan. I'll say again. But they have produced a lot of crap balls in the last few years. They've produced a lot of balls. They've produced balls that got replaced after an over. So you don't want to.
I still wonder just how big a part in Bazball that summer of Duke's balls played in England managing to perform in the way that they did in 2022. Can you remember there was that
Yeah,
batch,
the dodgy batch, yeah.
the dodgy batch? Do you know what we've been talking for best part of 50 minutes? We do have a guy with an England cap just positioned above. What I imagine is a picture of him holding some kind of trophy. I can't quite see. The sun's
Two
reflecting
of
on
them,
it.
I think. He's got two England caps there, look.
Two England caps. Oh, he's got
Yeah.
a really plush one. There's a photo taken at Trafalgar Square. There's a couple of match balls. There's a picture of said bowler with Freddie Flintoff, his old mate.
Is the ball
Harmy.
of Dukes Day?
Well, that's it. Harmy is the ball of
What is
Duke.
that? This would be a turn up, wouldn't it? Very
Believe it or
good.
not, you can actually. Well, do you think it's a Dukes or do you think it's a Cooker?
I think it's a Kookaburra. And is it from the West Indies?
I'd go Kookaburra.
No,
It
it's not.
seems.
It's from playing first class cricket in South Africa when Sri Lanka. Remember, I got injured mid-season, went to Sri Lanka for 3 games. Before I went to Sri Lanka, Brodie's debut series, and me and Otis Gibson went. I just Highveld Lions, and the first game I played it, and I got 6 for, and they give me that ball mounted on a nice bit of wood, 6 for 91,
Is
27.3
that the only ball you've kept?
over. Hey.
No.
No, I've
Is
got a few more.
that the only ball you've kept?
I've got a
It's a
few
white
more. I'll take
line,
a picture. I'll put it on the group. I'll take a picture. I'll show you the thing. But I think
but
on the Kookaburra, for me, it's time and a place in England. I'm a big believer that, and we, I'm, well, I agree with what all's been said. I don't like the Dukes monopolising everything. I'm a firm believer, like George, that they've been, I think they've been got complacent in recent past, last 10 years, where we've had batch of balls which have done everything, a batch of balls which have done nothing, a batch of balls which have gone out of shape. All these different, year upon year differences. The difference between the Kookaburra ball and the Duke ball is you can work so hard on the Kookaburra ball. The Kookaburra ball gets old. For people that are listening and want to know what the difference is from a bowler's point of view, the Kookaburra gets old after about 6 or 7 overs, it stops swinging. And then it obviously starts to go a bit soft. Like Nick says, the seam goes in over. You can work so hard on the Kookaburra ball. This is where Jimmy Anderson, if you remember Jimmy Anderson and Graham Swan and KP would, I think somebody else mentioned about fielders getting bombarded with abuse off Anderson and Broad and whoever, because they were getting their hands on the ball or their fingers on the ball. When in hot conditions, that, you know, that you work so hard to get the ball into a ship for a reverse swing or to try and keep it swinging, the minute it gets wet, it's gone. In at this point of the year, you can do so much to keep the outfield dry, the pitch being whatever it is. You get a little thin inside edge past the stumps, goes down a fine leg, and it goes on the covers where you've been. Yeah. It's gone. It's been, the ball goes soft, the ball gets bigger. And I mean, even, and then for me, then the concept of we need to produce fast bowlers. The bowl with a ball, which is either, which doesn't do as much as what the Dukes does. That for me, that's against what you're trying to do, because that's not natural elements going the way the game is going to go. That's just the ball getting wet. And you've now got a ball with a ball that for me doesn't produce fast bowlers, doesn't produce spinners. So for me, it's a time and a place. We'll have arguments about 7 first class games in a bulk at start. If we had 2 first class matches in the middle of the summer, June, July time, I think that would be the perfect time to play with the cricket ball if you want to get away from just Dukes monopolising it. But then
which
coming back to this
round,
we did last. Come back to this round, and there's a guy who, you know, we had on the following on talking about him yesterday, Sam Cook. He's been away bowling. I think he's bowled quite a bit over the course of the winter. He has probably been one of the informed bowlers in first-class cricket over the course of the last few years. Manners asked him, what's it like to stand in a queue waiting to play for England when other people are jumping in front of you every now and again? This lad has got serious talent. He had 275 first-class wickets at an average of 19. And he's somebody that everybody keeps looking beyond because his class is not quick enough. Somebody that you wouldn't expect the Kookaburra ball to suit. And he got 6 for 14 or 14 overs. You know, he was skillful, put the ball in the right area. So for me, the Kookaburra ball was just, it's got to be a time and a place in England. And nowhere, I mean, April, May, no matter how much rain we've had at the start of the summer, I don't think these pitches or the grounds were the right surfaces to use the Kookaburra ball on. You want it to reverse swing, you want it to spin. You know, once it goes 10 overs old, unfortunately, in England, the lush green grass, you ain't going to get that. And you're not going to get much spin as well.
I love this show, by the way. I absolutely love this show. Who'd have thought the Kookaburra ball could be so interesting?
They might have switched off by now.
I jump in again. It's amazing the contorted positions the English game is having to get into because it has given a month of the season to a white ball window. I mean, it all comes back to that. Whatever you look at, whatever problem, it all comes back to that. And maybe it's worth it. I don't know. But if you
I totally agree. I think the answer to cricket's crazy, crazy, crazy schedule, which can be charted back to early wisdoms at the end of the 19th century, if your answer to that is to create a whole new tournament and put it in the middle of the summer, well, anyway.
Just a little one on that one, George. There is, and Nick as well, there's a lot of talk around counties of turning fixtures around and trying to work out what the best formula is. And they talk about having wiping the one-day stuff at the start of the season. So if they had the one-day stuff at the start of the season and you had a block of...
Like they do in Australia. The 50-over tournament in Australia.
As they did here, it's pretty recent.
You know what I'm coming to, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's going to be played with a white Kookaburra ball. So are we happy to play with a white Kookaburra ball and it go all round the park because we want to entertain in a 50-over game, playing with coloured clothing, white ball, cricket? Or do we want to... That would be fine, apparently. And then we're complaining that the Kookaburra ball, when it's red, are we saying that's not the right time to do it? So I think it doesn't matter what happens in England. We play a lot of cricket in a short space of time and something's got to give. And unfortunately, like you said, when you play, you give a window for one white ball competition, everything else suffers.
Hey, I tell you what, it's going to be really interesting if mooted plans to shave off 2 weeks of the school summer holidays comes through, because so much of the game is built upon being played during that 6-week period. So if they lost, 50% of it, or 33% of it, that'd be interesting. Anyway, you talk about Sam Cook. Should we talk about some of the other performances that really stood out? Sam Northeast for England, Sam Cook for England, Tom Haynes. Where were you? So let's start with you, George. Where were you? You were at Edgbaston.
I was at Edgbaston. I saw Jake Libby get 800. I saw Kashif Ali get 200.
Well, and he hit both. He reached three figures with a six in both innings. Is that right?
He did.
All three did, didn't it?
All three did. Yeah, I mean, Kashif, less surprising than Jake Libby. But contrasting centuries. Kashif, increasingly beautiful, really.
The on drive, the walking on drive.
The on drive is lovely, but there's a late cut.
And I watched it about 300 times.
The late cut that's in the Edgbaston Museum already. There were lots of. He's gorgeous through the covers, square. He's a lovely looking player. He did get hit by the short ball a couple of times. But, you know, he's at the start of his career. I think it was his sixth game for Worcestershire, sixth championship game. And I'm sure there'll be a lot more centuries. So he was a lot of fun. Jake Libby, you know, averaging 51 as an opening batter for Worcestershire in the championship. That's pretty incredible, isn't it? Mm. I'm not going to get a look in. You know, would he score more runs than Zach Crawley or Ben Duckett? Well, probably wouldn't, to be fair, but I don't know. I don't know. He scored them very differently. In another era, he would be there or thereabouts, I'm sure. Played very well. In the end, the weather beat us, but actually they did quite well to get as much play as they did. And Warwickshire's bowling attack looked... they didn't look as if they were enjoying the flat wicket or the Kookaburra ball, but they were horrible conditions. Really, really, extremely windy and pretty chilly as well. So, an interesting game, but I wouldn't read masses into it.
There was no play at Durham. You were at Middlesex. You've spoken about that, Nick. Can we talk about Jimmy Anderson? We kind of talked about him briefly last week, but I think since then he's kind of indicated that it's unlikely, would you say, for him? Am I accurately reporting this? It's unlikely that he's going to play for Lancashire before the Test series in July. What did he say, do you think?
I think he said he'd play. We said at the tail enders thing at Lords that he would go at the end of May or June. Is it two games in June? I'll look at my cricketer wall chart. Available in good news agents. And my eyes aren't good enough to see it, but I think there are two games.
Well, let me head over to the Cricketer website then. Maybe it's there.
Well, there are two games, one at the end of June and one at the end of July. I can't see where the Lancashire are involved, but I think they are.
Okay. So,
Lancashire have got successive games at the end of June. They're away at Kent and at home against Notts.
Okay.
I've heard he's going to play one game before the first test, and that makes sense for me because Jimmy played quite a bit of cricket the last few years for Lancashire leading into the Test series, and there's a couple of times now he's getting injured, especially last year he got injured just before, and I think that might be playing on his mind. If you know the games in the first round, you know your last game is the 27th or starts on the 27th of May, the first test doesn't start the 10th of July. Is there any point for him? For him to play, especially the bowler he is. I think he knows his body well enough now to know what it takes to get ready for a Lord's first test match. So I think the interesting thing for me with Jimmy is, with all the stuff for Stokes not going IPL and not going World T20, for me that was a statement of we are now looking ahead. We are now looking towards Australia 2025. And the elephant in the room is we can't prepare for 2025, really, I think, properly, because I'm not sure Jimmy Anderson's going to get there. Now, what does that team do? What does that team look like? What are we trying to achieve with our plans getting us to India at home next summer and then beyond that? And I think England are now looking, and I don't think there's any secret, England looking to go down the fast bowler route because they see Australia come and start in Hazelwood. You see South Africa with Nokia, Rabada, Kutsia. You've got Shami, Siraj and Bumrah as Indias. You're seeing teams around the world now with fine, fast bowling, quick bowling pace attacks. And I don't think England have had too many pace bowlers in the recent sort of 30 years. And I think England now feel... I'll possibly feel Rob Key, Ben Stokes, Brendan McCullum might feel that we need to get back to that 90-mile-an-hour bowler once Anderson and Broad have gone. And it'll be interesting to see how England use Jimmy Anderson going into this series. or whether England try, or Rob Key and Ben Stokes has a conversation with Jimmy Anderson that this summer might be the last one, and how did they get Jimmy through that? So I didn't expect Jimmy to play a great deal in the first seven games. He probably will play one of the ones in June. And then there's got to be a difficult conversation between Jimmy Anderson and the selection panel, because it's a contract at the end of the season. England are trying to prepare going forward. And you know, how do you have that conversation with somebody who's been so great for you?
Do you think that, in a way, almost needs Jimmy himself to make that decision? It's just too difficult. You can't drop him, and it's just disrespect. It feels disrespectful to even suggest that, right? So, you know, in a weird way, maybe it's down to Jimmy to make that call, like Stuart Broad did.
Surely, I mean, come on, there are people in management get very well paid to make decisions. It's not brave.
Yeah.
Come on, you know, if they think they need to move on, they have a mature conversation with him. If they think that's right, on merit, he gets the other side, doesn't he? Look, I would never tell someone to retire. If he wants to play, loves cricket, brilliant. That's an asset to English cricket. But it doesn't mean you have to pick him. I mean, they're very capable of having tough decisions with Sam Cook or, you know, a million other players who miss out. You've got to not worry about the media backlash or anything. Explain things maturely, possibly. I can see it from both sides. I don't have a really strong view on it.
I think we all can. If
James Anderson is leading the attack in Australia as a 42-year-old, I think England are in trouble.
But do you think any of us, as we sit here right now, think that Jimmy Anderson will play for England against Australia at the end of next year?
No. It feels like the trouble with Jimmy is that he's so anomalous in you know, that you do have to sort of, I mean, I'm with Harvey, I don't think he will, and I don't think it. The thing is, he's not going to get any taller. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, he's not going to get taller. He might not get any slower, but if he's the same James Anderson as the last few series, he's going to go. He'll go to Australia, won't let England down. He'll probably be their best bowler. But
will he
be
though?
England's best? Well,
will he,
he
will
has
he,
been.
Do you
he
think?
Been.
Do you honestly think he will be their best bowler?
That's not my point. He may well go and be England's best bowler, and be the most accurate bowler and cause problems in the areas where he's always caused problems. But as you say, if James Anderson is England's best bowler on the next tour of Australia, you'd think it won't land England in great stead because.
I can't even see that as an option, Jimmy Anderson.
We would have said after the Ashes that we couldn't have seen him going well in India, and then he goes to. This is why I say he's such an anomaly, in that you do have to take the age thing out of it almost and think. I'm not saying he should go or will go or will be his best bowler or puts England in a great spot if he does, because of the kind of bowler that Australia have shown sort of need to win there. But essentially, you wouldn't rule it out.
I'm ruling it out right now. Do you think that the conversation has been made more difficult by the fact that Chris Wokes himself is pushing 35, George, 34 maybe?
Yeah,
generally, you wouldn't say, course, the whole planning ahead thing has gone terribly well. Yeah, I mean, not planning ahead. You wouldn't say that through injury or form overseas or whatever. Yeah.
Ollie Robinson and Chris Wokes, you'd say, I'd suggest, if Chris Wokes was 3 years younger and if Ollie Robinson wasn't going through this situation involving his make or break season, they're the guys that would step in for Anderson. Would you not say? They're your bankers.
You don't have to go for like either. You could open with completely different people. Maybe they're, it does feel that when England tried to look to the future, there was a bit of a backlash. You know, remember when they picked Sam Curran instead of Stuart Broad, for example, or when they
the whole Caribbean series,
Craig Overton ahead of Jimmy Anderson. I mean, and you know, those guys got a bit unlucky with the wickets. You know, maybe if Anderson and Broad had gone on that Caribbean tour, their careers would have ended a wee bit earlier. I don't know. The wickets were, you know, real flat.
Oh, yeah. They were turgid. Those first two tests were absolutely awful.
But it does happen, which is why with these county wickets, because they're trying to prepare them for that. You know, I don't think I've seen England win in the Caribbean as a test series. Maybe I did.
No.
Well, you know, no, it's been
a lot of tours there since Harmy was bowling them out.
It's been 20 years.
So I don't. You don't have to do it that way. I wouldn't rule it out. I remember sitting. Do you remember Jimmy Anderson basically captained England in the Sydney Test because Joe Root was ill? And at the end, we were sitting in the bowels of the stadium at the SCG on a baking hot day. And he said, you know, it's a disappointing way to finish my Ashes career in Australia. And then he said, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure I could bear for this to be my last experience. And he was back there 4 years later. It's incredible. So, and now we're almost 2 years on from that. I mean, haven't we, John, learned not to write him off?
No, for me, you don't write, you never ever write Jimmy off.
Hang on. When he's 50, we'll be writing him off, won't we?
Yeah, well, every time we have wrote him off, this is the problem. We haven't had anybody to stand up.
I've not written him off before.
Yeah, but every time England have looked to move on, like George is saying, nobody stood up. This is the problem.
Absolutely. Now, and the point I was making is, isn't that because Chris Wokes came in and was man of the series, player of the series last summer?
But not in Australia.
He stood up.
Yeah, that was at home. But Brodie's moved on, so he's officially gone. I don't see. I think Jimmy's very reluctant to retire because I think he loves the game that much. He loves going away, playing, challenging himself all around the world. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think what's important now for the selectors' point of view could be not so much out of Anderson's hands, but I think this could be the time where England have to look at the other four or five bowlers that they see can possibly compete against India at home and win the Ashes away. And you're almost looking at Jimmy and going, well, we'll know what we're going to get with you. But we need to find a formula that's going to beat Australia and Australia, because since 2010, 2011, we haven't even looked like winning a test match, never mind winning a series. So I think the initial part of the summer, test matches, will be a good indication of where England are looking to go from a fast bowler's point of view. Anderson will still be involved in the conversation and being around. I just don't think he'll be front and centre when it comes to Australia. The hardest part for me is seeing this great career. I wouldn't like to peter it out in not having this great fanfare and farewell. Now, there's nothing wrong with having him in Australia. He might not play a game, but at least you have him. Then he doesn't get the send-off for you, what you want that career to have. What I see in this summer is there's a test match. The fourth test match of this summer is at Old Trafford. And I just wonder if there's a conversation had, Jimmy might think, well, that might be my turn, like you've just mentioned, John. That might be my way of saying goodbye to English cricket. Do you know what? I really hope that would happen. Because if it goes beyond that, I don't think you'll get the send-off that the great career he deserves. Because if he goes to Australia or he plays next summer, he might not play the games. He might just sit around carrying drinks. He might play a game or a watered-down test match to say goodbye. I think, for me, I would potentially look at going to the ground where I've made my name. I'm going to bowl at the end, which is named after me, which is crazy. And I think that would be my send off. But I'll be interested to see how what George says, that honest conversation goes, because I'm sure it's being had in the four walls of English cricket at this moment in time. Because of not leaving him out, it's actually how does he finish? Because his career has been far too good for it just to finish out on a wet Monday afternoon against nobody.
Old Trafford have an Ashes test in 2031.
Yeah.
There you go. That's the one. They can finish there.
Can we play a coach by then?
I think if he plays every test this summer and then plays against Zimbabwe, I think that would be his 200th test match. He will finish with the Zimbabwe test. He started with the Zimbabwe test. He'll equal Sachin's record and off he goes into the night.
And Martin spoiled his reputation by hanging on.
He didn't. Kapil Dev did.
Well, so Jimmy Anderson is not
obviously about, obviously
whatever he wants. He's not about these personal records. He's about winning games.
Yeah, of course.
It mustn't be about holding on for that sort of milestone. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he never bowls another ball. He's had an incredible, great career, and he's going to be very fondly remembered. So I agree with everything that Harmy said, to be honest. But this is, we'll come back to the Kookaburra thing here. This is why they're experimenting with it, because we're not producing bowlers or cricketers, really, that challenge in overseas conditions. We have a myriad of fast, medium seamers who nibble it, and they're brilliant, and I love that cricket. And I don't particularly like the Kookaburra, I'll say again, but you know, if the rest of the world are using it, we're playing a different sport.
We literally are in August. We started with the Kookaburra and we're kind of finishing with the Kookaburra, unless there is anything else anybody would like to talk about. Or
we should probably touch on Sam Northey specifically. I mean,
go on.
It was 335 not out.
I was there, by the way, in 1990. Yeah.
Well, when gone to take down all that artwork now, haven't they? Got to rename all those things that are named after 333 and Gooch. She's got to go.
Yeah.
He can have his bat back that's been sat in the museum.
Yeah.
It was very flat, but
Sachin Tendulkar with his wonderful catch. I saw that with my own eyes. Alan Lamb.
I hate to say I wasn't
Eddie bored, Hemmings.
I saw that. Make you all feel very old,
but I wasn't alive. I did a lot of reading about it last week, though.
Do you know who else was there? Andrew Miller and Lawrence Booth.
Were they covering it?
We were all kids, and we were all at that test match. How strange is that? Yes, talk about Sam Northeast.
Only because it's very easy to get to this round, look at this round of fiction and say, oh, Kookaburra flat, batters, hard bowlers. But like 335, you still have to play extremely well. And that even that is probably underselling it. You've still got to go where very few people have ever gone before in the game. And bear in mind, we're talking about a ball that, as you say, is used in a lot of parts of the world. So, it was a friendly pitch, et cetera, but, you know, I think he gave a chance to backward point on 10 and another chance to backward point on about well into three figures, and he was mis-stumpy on 291. But essentially, this is a guy who's got an unbeaten quadruple 100 already. And also, like, we're talking about guys who, you know, been unfortunate not to play for England. Sam Northeast feels like he slips right into that James Hildreth category, doesn't he? Of guys who, in all likelihood, will finish without an England test cap. I mean, when I remember interviewing Sam last year and basically said that he got to a point now where he could sort of accept that and just play to see. His quote to me actually was, I dug it out last week. Said, I just want to play now to see how far I can take the game. And fair play, because in the last 2 years, he's gone 410 not out, 335 not out. A different era might well have played for England, and I think it'd be fair to say people less qualified probably have done. Just as you probably say the same about Sam Cooke, who, by the way, gets better every single year. And I think a lot of people's idea of Sam Cooke is very different to the reality, because the people who have seen him in, I don't know, 2018, 2019, he comes back every year quicker, more skillful. He before this week, said to me that he really enjoys bowling the Kookaburra. I think it's lighter in the hand, gets more bounce with it, swings it more early on. He's gone and done Lions trips, bowled with it. He's excellent, and he's much better than what a lot of people think. So a lot of people think that Sam Cooke is the Sam Cooke they would have saw when they last saw him. But genuinely, he comes back every year better and more skillful and quicker, crucially, than the previous years. And one of his big things this year was giving himself the best shot. I think he's missed three games in the last two or three years because he's so good, because Essex don't have big squads, because they're always challenging him on the field. But wouldn't be surprised me if he really pushes to be rotated once or twice just so he's 100% when he plays. So when he's 100%, there is no one English, uncapped, better than him on the circuit.
What's he doing with the ball to get the movement that others aren't?
I don't know, but it's in terms of what he's doing with it or what's actually happening.
Well, it looked like I just watched the videos online.
In terms of what he's actively doing with it, see, if you guys have said to me, I can't remember who else said it recently, but he said he finds it lighter in the hand. I mean, who was it? I read someone say this a few days ago. They find it lighter on the hand. They find that therefore they can go quicker with it. Finds almost like he can put more into his action with it. Whereas the Duke's that little bit heavier, that little bit more control. I think also the nature of the beast is that a lot of guys were very, very skillful. Because they're so skillful, know that they can, over a long season, can probably bowl 80% with the Dukes and have the same success. Whereas I think it's being able to, you know, properly crank it up and go as hard as you can with the Kookaburra and knowing that, I don't know, but while also retaining the same skills, if that makes sense.
I thought I watched a bit of him out because obviously I knew we were going to have him on. So I went back and watched a bit of the footage of the wickets that he got. And his angles, he used the crease very, very well. Very smart with his, you know, with his angles attacking off stump. We spoke about Jimmy Anderson and obviously don't want to put anybody in that bracket. But the beauty about Anderson is Anderson's ability to take the ball onto or away from off stump from just using the crease was what I think made Jimmy far superior to anybody else, arguably, that's ever played the game, never mind playing in England. And I thought Sam Cook this week, there was a bit of that in it. Me and Neil Manthorpe spoke to him yesterday, and he talked about, you know, we asked him about playing for England, and he said, and he was very realistic. I love the conversation because he's the stereotypical fast bowler who's not got that many, very many brain cells. He is the complete opposite. Very intelligent lad, spoke very well, and he talked about, you know, why he hasn't played for England. He said, well, I modelled my style and my bowling on two of the greatest that I've ever played. And one's still playing at 41 and the other one's just finished at 37. So I couldn't get in the team. He was realistic on that front. His record, like Nick said, is ridiculous. We did some things. He's got 275 wickets, an average of 19. In the last four seasons, he's averaged 21, 50 wickets at 14, 51 wickets at 16. So, you know, and he's talked about trying to get a little bit quicker, but also said in the last sort of year, 18 months, that he's got a position where he's not going to get any quicker. And he's now, you know, trying to work on different skill sets, which is, you know, taking the ball in, bringing the ball away and using his length. And he plays on a wicket at Chelmsford, which is not, I would say, a seamer friendly, because obviously all their wickets are Simon Harmer back end of the summer. He, you know, there are, you know, a lot of turning wickets. So I think he's had to use his skills very, very well, and he seems to be getting better and better. Whether he can play for England, 26-year-old, probably he's at his peak from a education point of view, from a game management and game awareness point of view. If there was ever a time that Sam Cook was to get selected from England, this is probably in the next year or two where he is at his peak of his powers before it starts to sort of drop off. So I'd be intrigued to see how the England selectors have watched the way Sam Cook's development is over the last 18 months, and does he fit into the group? I suspect he probably doesn't, and he's going to be one of them bowlers that if he gets a cap, it'll be one, possibly two. If he doesn't get a cap, he'll go down as likes of Glenn Chappell and one or two others. That Martin Bicknell, who only played a handful of times, or if didn't play. You know, one of the sort of that great quiz question is who's, you know, the best first class cricketer never to get a cap. And I think we've both said that. I think both names start with Sam, and unfortunately, Northeastern Cook might never play for England.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one of a kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, guys. This is going to be a short show, by the way. I'm going to leave you the question, a quick question. Remember back in 2012 and West Indies were in town and England went 2-0 up? Yes. Mind the Windows. Was it Mind the Windows? Was it that one?
No. No, Tino was on four.
That was a different one. That was a different one. Either way, remember then.
No, different Tino. Tino went when Tino got 95.
Yeah. You know, Edgbaston. I think that was the first time. Was that the first time they tried to look beyond Anderson abroad?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Stephen Finn, Graham Onions, and Tim Bresnan.
And taught now Viv.
Yeah, Ramdy. What a test.
Yeah, I don't know.
So let's look to that third test against West Indies, and let's just say that England are 2-0 up and they decide to look to the future. And they don't play Anderson and they don't play Wokes and they don't play Robinson. Or maybe they do, but they certainly don't play Anderson. So what three bowlers would you say with an eye to the future or an eye to whatever, or they're just all injured? What three bowlers would you like to see bowl for England in that third test match?
All three play for Durham.
Carson Potts, I'd say. Would you all agree? I'd say that makes sense. No?
If you want to win in Australia, for me, if you want to win in Australia, England have got to have a good look at Cass. Mm, they've got to have a better look at Potts. Got to have a better look at Potts, but he's not the quickest. Yeah, you know, the fast bowler that you think is going to go over there.
He's in the category with Cook and Robinson, I suspect.
Yes, I agree with that. And then you've got Wood and Archer. Now, that four or five there are what you take to Australia. If Jimmy's around, you take him. But, England won't win. England are going to win Australia with fast bowlers. So, for me, Wood has to open a bowler now, right? I've had this conversation with one or two people higher up the food chain and gone, right, if you're an opening batter, do you want to face 95 mile an hour or do you want to face 82 mile an hour? With your very first ball, would you like to face Mark Wood at 95 mile an hour with your first ball or your 40th ball? Because that's when he comes on. And I think Mark Wood now, for me, England have got it, especially overseas. The one thing about that Indian tour tells me that the only time we looked dangerous to the new ball was when Mark Wood was bowling in it.
It's true. That is true.
Nobody else. Mark Wood. So, and yes, people go, you're Durham, you're Ashington. But I tell you what, England go forward. With Mark Wood as your open bowler, with Jofra Archer. And if I had my crystal ball on going into that first test in Brisbane, all fit, my bowling attack would be Mark Wood. And it's a big shout, this, because I've bagged him for the last 6 months. But if I could get Mark Wood, Jofra Archer, Ollie Robinson, Ben Stokes, possibly Shoaib Bashir as my bowling attack, I'd fancy myself to give Australia a good game in their back garden. I've got Pierce, all-rounder.
There is some wishful thinking, isn't there? I mean, Mark Wood is of an age where fast bowlers tend to get a bit slower. And I think he is the fastest England bowler I've ever seen, might be the fastest there ever has been. Brilliant.
Agreed.
But you know, let's be honest about what happens to fast bowlers in their mid-30s.
Yeah.
And Jofra, I mean, you know, we're all in love with the idea of what Jofra might be able to offer again. But, you know, you can't plan on Jofra right now, can you?
No, you can't.
You've got to hope on Jofra and give him every opportunity. But I would be very uneasy about plans. So, you know, the points that Harmy makes are, Cass is absolutely worthy of investment, but he's not the finished article now, which is Harmy's point. You.
So that's why he should play.
Well, that's an argument for
why he should play. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you could argue that about a few people. You know, John Turner. We're going back into names we've talked about before.
Well, the name that we've not mentioned today somehow, because it feels like he's been on the cusp of a lot of these, like the series we've spoken about, is Saqib Hamood. He's obviously another one who was broken by that Caribbean series. He's one who, when he's Pitt is due a proper go. Like, there was a lot of investment in before. He's still got an ECB pace bowling contract. He has an action that would allow him to reverse it. He's pretty quick. And yeah, I don't know. And, you know, and I don't think it's right that people just fall off the radar because they get a couple of, you know, a couple of proper fast bowlers injuries. And he's still very much the right age. He just needs to, you know, when he's fit, I think there's a chance he'll play back in the May, isn't it? I think I read. If that can happen, you'd like to think he'd come back in the conversation as well. He's one of those three. Who is it? It's him, Turner, and Jamie Overton, isn't it? With the pace bowling contract.
No,
so not Jamie. Tom.
As well. But Jamie, you've got all these in the mix.
Yeah, Tommy Dawes.
When you talk about this topic of conversation, we're going to get bowlers who can bowl in excess of 85 mile an hour, because that's what we need to have to take on the big boys. If you want to be in,
except, sorry to interrupt, because obviously you know you're brilliant, but if you bowl 85 miles an hour in Australia, you just fit in. You've got to do something with it as well. Just bowling fast, you know, they grow up on that stuff. They play fast bowling great.
We've gone with less than 85 mile an hour and we've lost 5-0, 4-1.
You're right. It has to be one of the ingredients. But this would be, look, if I'm being critical about Cass at the moment, and I don't want to be, because I agree with everything you've said, there's loads of potential that he is going to have to do a bit more with the ball, isn't he? There's pace and there's skill, and I'm sure it can all come together, which is justifies your point. Whether you have to pick someone in a test match to do that, I mean, you might argue that playing county cricket is ideal for them, but I don't know. I mean, it's a reasonable point, but just pace alone ain't going to do it.
What England have always done is we get to these points, we try and make these changes and we try and look to the future. And what do?
Play Boyd Rankin.
We always come back to Broad and we always came back to Broad and Anderson. Why? Because they were durable, they were skillful, and they were still the best we have. Unfortunately, one's gone. And I suspect by the time we get to Australia, they'll all have gone as well. So that's why these bowlers have got to play now, to give them 10 test matches, 8 to 10 test matches before they get anywhere near Australia. We go to Australia and start picking players who haven't played a great deal of international cricket. Well, I think we've got the same results we had in the last few years, a few times we've been there.
Do you know who also needs to go? Us.
Sorry.
Us.
Yeah.
I was going to be a sorry player, John.
Tom Laws. Gus Atkinson, Tom Laws and Matt Dunn.
We've got to see what they can do. Yeah. We've got to see what they can do without Anderson, because Anderson has held us together for far too long. And that is I'm talking that as a friend of Jimmy, and I still think Jimmy's got a huge
That's
amount.
It's not going to be in the clip, Harmy, mate. It's
no,
yeah.
Drop Anderson, Wars Harmison.
No.
Teammate.
I've said worse about people. I've had a lot more dealings with and had that conversation, unfortunately, as well.
No, it's your honesty that makes you so good at this. It's good.
Yeah. He's waited since 2008 to get back at Anderson.
No, you're joking. Definitely not.
Right, guys, get out of here. We'll be back next week looking back at hopefully more than one positive result. There's loads of great games that are going to be taking place. Where are we going to be? Oh, I should say, I've got to mention the cricketer, don't I? While I'm looking for that, George,
did you know, on that, I think that certainly at the games, the game that I attended this week, I don't think any of the other national outlets apart from the BBC were there. So there is genuinely a point of difference from the cricketer coverage.
Mm.
We are at games. We are, you know, talking to people and watching. You won't see that from many other organisations anymore. In fact, it was a bit depressing, you know, how little interest there was in the start of the season. But I mean, there's so much cricket. I'm not blaming my colleagues, because you need to have a rest. But the cricketer does send to games still.
The six times
back to back to back to back to back to back domestic coverage champions, whatever the official term is.
I'll tell you exactly, Nick.
I've never seen the trophy. There is a trophy. I've not seen it.
Well, you own the trophy. You should all have one each. There's six staff members. You should have one each. I think there's six. The cricketer, of course, is committed to having reporters on the ground at every round of county fixtures this summer. And that commitment has just been recognised again, named the best place to read about the county game online for the sixth year in a row at the ECB Domestic Cricket Journalism Awards. So well done to all you guys. It's brilliant, brilliant work. I certainly subscribe and have read the magazine ever since holed up in St George's Hospital back in 1984, when one of the kids at my dad's school brought me a box of Wisden Cricketer magazines. What was it called back then? It was the Cricketer magazine and Wisden Cricket magazine, I think. Either way, Cricketer's always been my favourite. And I should also mention that for award-winning news and analysis about all 18 counties all year round, head to thecricketer.com/subscriptions and sign up for now. Sign up now for just £3.99 a month. So where are you going to be this week, George?
I'm going to start off at Edgbaston. Durham are there.
That is going to be a good game.
Yeah, see, you should see
the Rossworth Derby, eh?
You should see the boundary. It is. I mean, it's the shorter boundary as I think I've ever seen in the first class game.
Wow.
So if Ben Stokes is there, and I don't know, do you know, Harmy, whether he might be?
No, I don't think he is. I think he's playing. I don't know if it's. I think he's. They're talking about playing three games. Is he talking about playing three games? I'm not sure if he is there, but no matter what, actually, to be fair, I think that Warwickshire put something out. Is it the 30 years since the Lara?
Yeah, 30-year anniversary. Winning
anniversary. Simon Brown tells a great story that the 501 was played on a boundary with very, very short one side. And he said Lara had a whole sort of afternoon of picking a mickey out of Durham bowlers by hitting five fours on one side and then clipping it for three on the other side and then doing exactly the same in the other over. So that's how good that sort of, not 500 was, but how good that bloke was. I think we bowled at him all afternoon because he faced all six balls by getting the maximum he could out of each over.
Nick, where are you going to be?
I'm going to be in Bristol for Gloucester to Yorkshire. So expecting Brook and Root. And hoping to see some play. I think it was around this time last year that I started going to just going up on the train to watch washouts. See, up is Bristol up? Going sideways to Bristol to watch it rain. But should be good if that is dry enough to go ahead. I mean, Brooke looked in pretty handy touch last week, and be nice to see Joe Root back as well.
It's always good. It's always nice.
Think about the Oval, back. John, for the last couple of
you
days.
You are. According to the spreadsheet I've got in front of me.
but you know, maybe we'll be flexible with that. Let's see how it goes.
Well, if you're there on Monday, I'll be there, but I've got the kids. It's the end of the Easter holidays.
You're taking the kids to work on Monday?
No, I've got the kids Friday to Sunday. Then they go back on Monday. So I might pop along to the Oval on Monday. We shall see if the game's still going. Harmy, are you going on holiday?
No, I'm going a week after I go on holiday.
Okay, cool.
Me and my wife are going, just the two of us, for a sponsored silence for 4 days, just to get away from the kids.
Where are you going?
Grand Canaria. Nice. Grand Canaria. Get some nice winter sun, because it's still going to be raining by then.
How wet was it at Durham last week?
Very wet. I was there on Thursday, at a meeting at Durham Thursday, bumming at Scott Borthwick, and he said, please go out and have a look on the outfield. And I mean, just loads and loads of worm casts. And it was like, I'm not even going to go too much further because my feet were sinking. It was so wet. And at the time, they had the big industrial light heater on the surface to try and dry it out. Scott did say on the Thursday, I'd be amazed if we bowled ball this week. And that's what happened.
So it proved.
When you see that industrial light thing, always feel like that's very, it sort of screams last resort territory, doesn't it? It's like nothing else is. It looks fantastic, but it does also look like something that you're really pleading with to work, if you know what I mean.
I remember in Gaul 2000, Joe, I'm not sure if any was out there that series 2008 when it was the first test match after the tsunami, but the day before the game, the helicopter was trying to dry the field out. You know you're in trouble when something like that.
Do you know they started using those heat lamps, well, certainly at Edgbaston, when they were confiscated for drug dealers.
Who were
using them to grow cannabis. I don't know whether that's what they're actually doing on the outfield, hiding in plain sight.
There's a hell of a lot of them in the North East of England.
They can argue that it's a particularly, I don't know, hard-wearing type of grass.
Guys, there's nowhere to go from that, so let's call it a day. We'll be back next week. Thanks for your time.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.